successful and not quite so successful searches at the LHC, and what it means for minimal supersymmetry, in particular, the way we look at it, I'll talk about, called the phenomenological MSSM. So this is work done with these fine folks at Slack, Matthew Carroll-Rowley, Joanne, Stefan, and Tom. And if you're interested, I encourage you to check out our papers here. So we start with the question, how well is SUSY being limited? So as we know, the LHC is continuing to push things further and further. The problem with constraining a big thing like SUSY is that even in its most minimal form, SUSY has over 100 free parameters. And so the standard thing to do is to present your search results in very specific frameworks. So the canonical example for a long time was MSugra, where at the cost of making some high-scale assumptions, you can go down to a very small set of parameters and construct these exclusion curves. The other more recent development that people here have worked on is simplified models, where again, you go to a smaller parameter space, but here you're using more, I would argue, search-relevant parameters like new particle masses. And you can get these curves like the direct stop searches here. You still assume the rest of the spectrum is decoupled. And what I'm going to talk to you about today is taking a different approach, which is instead to scan over the larger parameter space, embracing the large dimensionality, and searching for spectra that are consistent with all existing experimental bounds. So necessarily, this is a scan over a large number of parameter space. So we're going to sacrifice full coverage. I'm not going to show you any exclusions on any SUSY parameters today. But what you get in turn is more generality. So our results aren't to be interpreted as limits, but as examples of the wide array of possible things you can get in the MSSM. And consequently, we take the approach that we're looking to make sure that as you construct your searches, that no corners are left behind.
And the scan is over the soft parameters?
The scan, I'll show you what the parameters are going to be. They're going to be over, right, the soft parameters defined at the low scan. That's right. Okay, so I'll describe exactly our methodology in doing the phenomenological MSSM. Then I'll talk about what LHC search results have done for us, and I'll mention some stuff about what a 125 GeV Higgs would mean for the MSSM, and close with some stuff to talk about fine-tuning. Okay. So, as I mentioned, the full MSSM has over 100 free parameters, and many of these are admittedly fairly strongly constrained. So we do try to knock this down a little bit just by making sort of bottom-up, using bottom-up data. So the idea is, for instance, we impose minimal flavor violation to get rid of things like flavor change neutral currents. Take this particle mass matrix to be flavor diagonal, with the first two generations degenerate, and all those new phases in the new SUSY parameter matrices we throw out. So no new sources of CP violation. So just like other approaches, we are reducing the number of parameters we have. But as opposed to something like MSugra, where there's a high-scale assumption, we just go from the bottom up and say, well, these parameters, even if they're allowed to float within their range, whatever CP phases you have, probably won't do too much for the phenomenology we look at. So literally, like, our A-term mixing matrices are proportional to the U-couples. If that's... I think the... Right. I mean, I think, is that right? Right. So I guess the second is more the, that's right. I think the I guess if you're asking the question, the answer would probably be, you know, to lowest order, this is minimal budget violation.
And
that
would be entry level.
Yeah.
But normally that's a fairly restricted statement, right? Because normally there's not a lot of things that would be linear in the balances. So it's not minimal flavor violation in the way that the minimal.
It's not,
violation,
you know, strict, you know. Sure. Agreed.
Yes, so concretely for the scalar, for the, say, squark mass metrics?
Yeah.
How's that parameterized?
So specifically, there is one mass for the first two generations, so a Q, a U, and a D, and then a separate mass for the third generation.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, don't mix it.
So these are explicitly these 19 parameters. So as advertised, there are 5 soft masses for the first two generations, 5 masses for the third generation. The other 3 parameters now, the Beno, Wino, Galeno masses, mu is the Higgs-Zeno, and MA, tan beta in the Higgs sector, and finally these A-terms. And again, they're only for the heavy guys because of minimal flavor violation.
So the M1 prime, M2 prime theorem, the Beno, Wino, Galeno at the weak scale?
So these are all defined, right, at the weak scale. So mm-hmm. we're not doing any running. That's right. So I'm going to show the results of you have 2 scans today. One of them is where we scan over these 19 parameters, and any points that are consistent with existing constraints we put into a box, we call it our model set, and then we see how this model set reacts to LHC constraints. The parallel second scan I'm going to show is where we take these 19 parameters and add a 20th, that is, we add a light gravitino. And in some sense, you can say that this scan is sort of kind of motivated as a great generalization of these M Sugra kind of plots where you tend to have a Beno LSP. This parallel scan with the light gravitino is sort of motivated by the gauge mediation exclusion plots where you have a light gravitino. So this tends to lead to a lot of different phenomenology, which I'll discuss. So these are 5 soft masses for the
A
or the A terms. That's right, for the third generation, right, for the top, the bottom, and the top. So it's roughly speaking the difference between like the squarks and the quarks. So it's what's breaking Suzy. So you can't have the superpartner of the electron, the selectron, can't have the same mass as the electron, otherwise we would have seen it already. So if Suzy is realized in nature, it has to be broken. So you can either do that using some high scale dynamics, but what we do is we just, so from the ground up, just put in explicitly some soft mass for it.
That's the,
yeah. We just put it in, yeah. That's right. OK, so I can show you the scan ranges for our parameters. They're shown on the left side here. Our sparticles all go up to about 4 TeV. In our second scan, when we have a gravitino, it's scanned with a log prior from an electron volt up to a TeV. These parameters are all scanned with flat priors. For comparison, when this BMSSM stuff was first done at SLOC, they did a scan with slightly lighter sparticles only going up to a TeV. And a question to ask is, but what happened to this set of models, with sparticles going up to a TeV? So this was done a few years ago, before the LHC really started to collect a lot of data. And this is what happened to the set of PMSSM models with sparticles up to a TeV. So this is, this plot shows our models in the squark and Galeno mass plane from the old scan, and the different colors just indicate the density of models. And after the one inverse parameter bar in Atlas Jest plus Met search, some folks in the Atlas collaboration at Freiburg took our model, a big chunk of them, and put them through their JL4 detector simulator and did all the searches right. And they found that almost all of these models are excluded. So, there are some models that are still left up here, indicated by the triangles. And these are interesting to think about, why did these survive but not the ones behind them? But by and large, if you want a bigger set of models to play with today's LHC, you want to make a new scan. So this is what I'm going to talk to you about now.
So this is rolled out by which data?
So this is the one inverse femtobarn Atlas Jets plus Met search. Just the standard SUSY search.
What is the color code from 0 to 16, the number of models?
Right, so this is Bin in Squark and Gluino, in the Squark Gluino mask plane. So this means we have about 20 models in the Squark Gluino mask plane.
That's another question.
Yeah.
These soft masses are among your 105 parameters, or are there additional?
Right, they're among. So there are others like CP phases that we...
So you could even have more parameters if you broke the SUSY in a different way or something.
No. Given your assumptions, you killed off all the 19.
Right.
Those are the 1 out of 5 are the most general parameters for breaking down
in
the most supersymmetric baseline
model.
We've had dinner, I think, for But you push these down to 19 by this flavor diagram.
By all these MFVs.
Yeah.
You're right, all those.
But the question that, for example, you're excluding dimension 4, would those be new parameters if you allow them?
Sorry? If you allow
non-soft masses, whatever they're called, hard masses.
The number of non-operators
are irrelevant, right? That's what
right.
No, but so, if you allow. You can have more, soft supersymmetric supersymmetric ranking terms.
Right.
But then you would have quadratic divergences in these maps. And if you want supersymmetry to solve parity problem, that's why you restrict the soft terms.
Yeah.
If you take a low squark, a point in the lower right corner, what's
right.
the dominant reaction that gets modeled?
If you have a low squark but a heavy Gluino, it's some function exactly where you are, but I would still imagine it's just squark. If your squarks are down here, I imagine it's just squark and not the Gluinos.
And those little models not excluded, like that's one model, like models in a gray triangle,
right.
One of the 20 models,
sure,
live,
that's
and
right.
all the others die.
That's right. So this is why we go to
So each triangle is one.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
You say it's flat priors. How much does it change if you change that
prior? So actually, this scan, they also looked at, they also did it using log priors for their parameters. And qualitatively, it's the same. Quantitatively, there are some differences. So if you use log priors, you get different, you get more kind of compressed spectra, for instance. But qualitatively, the answer is the same. But right, that's a question. How do you pick a prior? Okay, so I think that's it. So we have two separate scans. In a neutral in LSP, we use this 19-dimensional parameter space. And we're going to require the lattice neutralino to be the LSP. In our second scan, we add the gravitino and require it to be the LSP. So mechanically, we generate the spectra with these spectrum generators. And if a point gives pathologies like tachyons, we throw it out. If the generators disagree significantly, we also throw out the point. Then we calculate decay tables with a host of programs shown here. Especially when you're decaying a gravitino, some of them often, some of the decays often aren't in the standard program, so there's a lot of tweaking that goes on behind the scenes, or we calculate it in MadGraph or CalCut explicitly.
When you do this, so you're doing a few million points, right? So that's roughly 2 points per each.
Right, so it's not it's a sparse scan.
Right.
It's not we by no means try to, cover. But by the same token, I won't say, this is the best fit point in the PMS. I mean,
why are you scanning over fewer points for gravitino than for neutrino when gravitino has an extra dimension? So you would think you would need more points.
Good. So neither of these is intended to be a comprehensive scan. The reason that we choose these numbers of points is because we are limited by the slack cluster. And so, at some point, we wanted about 200,000 models left in the set. This is how long This is like a week of event generation on the Slack cluster. So that's kind of what drives how many points we start with. It's the ending, the size of the final set we want to control. It's a computational thing, right? We want to get a wide possible array of possibilities. We want to get a wide array of possibilities. We don't want
to. I don't think that's what you meant to ask. I think you're asking why the set that has actually more parameters has fewer points.
The set that has.
So Gravitino set.
So, I mean, we choose how many points we start with, right? I mean, but the acceptance rate is going to be different based on all the cuts we apply for the Neutralino set versus the Gravitino set. So the main thing is that we're going to impose dark matter constraints on the Neutralino LSP set. But for the second set, if the Gravitino is the LSP, dark matter constraints aren't really there. And so there's a much higher acceptance rate for the second scale. So in the Neutralino LSP scan, we calculate the thermal density of the lightest Neutralino. And we impose the WMAP measurement as an upper bound. So in other words, we're allowing for the possibility of other sources of dark matter. It's very bottom up. We remain agnostic. And we check the LSP against dark matter direct detection constraints. For the second scan with the Gravitino, we do something a little more complicated, which I'll talk about over the next few slides. We assume the NLSP is quasi-metastable, because it can only decay to a Gravitino. And we calculate what Rayleigh density it would reach, and then we assume that it decays later out of equilibrium to the Gravitino. So we check how many Gravitinos that would make, and then we also ask, does this late decay have any cosmological effects? So does it mess up BBN? For both sets, we check precision electroweak measurements, flavor constraints. We put a lower bound on charged particles. And at the time we started this scan, we took the latest constraints we had here for stable particles and dicals and put them in. Okay.
So did you say you're using BBN as one of the constraints?
Yes. And I'm gonna describe that actually very shortly. So let me say a bit about this Gravitino LSP phenomenology, because it's not always talked about. So if you know about Gravitinos from an EV up to a TEV, the scan range I said I was going in, now along a lot of the scan range, there's this Gravitino problem, which is that in the standard cosmology, they get overproduced. Our idea is just to look at collider and astrophysical phenomenology of models with very weakly interacting LSPs. And so coming from this motivation, we're going to make no assumptions. In particular, we're not going to assume that it's necessarily a standard cosmology. So there are ways around the Gravitino problem. Maybe you have a lower heating temperature. Maybe you have an additional source of entropy production. For the rest of my talk, I'm going to be completely agnostic about this and say, this is solved somehow. And all we have to worry about, and all we're going to consider, in fact, is Gravitino production from these NLSPs that reach, freeze out, and then decay later out of equilibrium to the Gravitino. So the resulting Gravitino LSP doesn't have dark matter direct detection constraints. However, these late decays can give you mess up BBN or other things. So here's the constraints from this NLSP decay for a neutral NLSP. So what happens is your neutral NLSP goes to Gravitino plus standard model stuff. If that standard model stuff is hadronic, then there are strong constraints from big band nucleosynthesis in a particular lifetime range for your NLSP. So even if it's not the leading decay, so even if your neutralino normally goes to photon Gravitino, Z Gravitino, Higgs Gravitino, so Z Gravitino has some small branching fraction of quarks, and has some branching fraction of quarks, and so this is what these different black curves show are the constraints for different hadronic branching fractions of the NLSP. So if the NLSP always goes to colored stuff plus Gravitino, it's this very strong constraint here. This is logarithmic. If the NLSP goes 10% of the time to Gravitino plus hadronic, this is the constraint shown here, and so on. So these are constraints from BBN, and they're very strongly dependent on the hadronic branching fraction. So in the process of, you know, taking, comparing our model to these constraints, we're calculating a lot of, you know, multi-body final states. Because these are the hadronic decay products aren't always in the leading decay. For longer lifetimes, doesn't matter what the standard model stuff is, as long as it's not neutrinos, you get some constraint from BBN, and that's shown here. And finally, for very long lifetimes, you have diffuse photon constraints. So there's a lot of stuff that goes into this. I haven't shown all of these kinds of constraints, and I won't. I'll just mention that for neutrino NLSPs, the story gets a little more complicated. This is a popular thing to think about, because if you have a neutrino NLSP, the canonical thing for it to go to is neutrino gravitino. And neutrinos don't interact very strongly, so these are often thought to be more OK. And they are. However, there are additional things. So there are small branch interactions, first of all, for, say, neutrino to go to electron Z gravitino. And then you get electrons and Zs that can create problems for BBN. There's also, so there's also the neutrinos produced in the standard two-body decay that can scatter. And these can produce standard model stuff that affects BBN. Finally, there are diffuse photon and neutrino constraints that come in. OK. So I talked about all the constraints that go in. Now I'm going to compare and contrast our two model sets for a bit so you guys can get a feel for the two different model sets. So the first thing that one can ask is, you know, what is the NLSP? So if the neutralino is the LSP, whenever it's a reno or hexeno, it has a charged guy very closely split. So you get, by far, the most common NLSP type is the chargeno. This is pretty straightforward. When your LSP is the gravitino, in the course of model generation, it turns out that the dominant constraints come from the stable particle and BBN constraints. Everything is driven by the fact that the NLSP is very long-lived because it can only go down to a gravitino. So the ordering of relative NLSP abundances roughly goes as how strong the stable particle constraint is. So neutrinos are pretty allowed. Colored NLSPs are pretty strongly discriminated against. Another thing you can ask about is the composition of the lightest neutralino. When the lightest neutralino is the LSP, it's dark matter. So you have to worry about how abundant it is and what the direct attention constraints are. So because Beano's don't annihilate enough, there aren't very many Beano LSPs. In the gravitino LSP set, it's a lot more even, as you would expect. Okay, so this messy plot is showing how we have stable particles in both sets. So this is for the neutralino LSP set, and what's shown is the mass splitting between the NLSP and the LSP against the NLSP mass. And these points are color-coded by NLSP type. So I mentioned that winos and hexenos come with very small splittings. And when these splittings are very small, you're just phase space suppressed enough that your chargeno, your first chargeno, can be detector stable. So if we just look at the red points, we see this clear corner cutout. And what happens is when the splitting goes below the pion mass, you have to go through a loop decay. Yes.
So when you evaporate the splitting, you evaporate
on the entry level? Okay, so we plug this into the we plug it into soft Susan suspect, and they include corrections. That's right. So below the pion mass, the chargeno becomes detector stable, and so there's this cut that's just from whatever the stable chargeno limit was. Okay. In the gravitino LSP set, there are tons of different stable particles. Generically, the NLSP is reasonably long-lived a lot of the time. Keep in mind that as the gravitino gets heavier, it interacts more and more weakly. And so the NLSP is more and more long-lived. What you see here in these diagonal lines turning into stripes are these stable particle constraints turning on as you increase the Gravitino mass. And so when the Gravitino gets very heavy, the NLSB becomes not only detector stable, but also cosmologically stable. And then BBN constraints come in and lead to these shapes up on top. So these bands, though, are the stable particle limits for different types of NLSBs. The effects of stable particle and BBN constraints is to cut the Gravitino mass distribution. So it started out as a flat box, but then as the Gravitino gets heavier, you know, you start to get cut out by stable particles. And then when you get to the cosmologically stable kind of masses, then you get BBN constraints, and they take a big bite out of your space. This is sort of the rough picture to keep in mind of what's happening in the Gravitino side. This is what's driving it. Just a couple more things about comparing the model sets. Here's the lightest neutralino mass distribution in the two model sets. So in the blue neutralino LSB set, the lightest neutralino is the LSB. And so it puts a lower bound on all the other particles in the spectrum. So this explains why, of course, it falls a lot faster. And keep in mind that it pushes up all the other particles, the neutralino LSP set will tend to have heavier spectra on average. So one example is the stops are heavier. So this is the lightest stop mass distribution. And these models have these sets have around the same number of models, so you can see a clear preference for lighter stops among the Gravitino LSPs. This has effects if you look in the Higgs mass distribution. So on average, you have heavier stops in the blue set. So with your neutralino LSP set, you have heavier Higgses on average. And I'll talk a bit later about this interesting region here. Okay, so I've described about our how we generated our models and some properties of the sets. Let me talk about how we implemented the LSP surfaces. So our pipeline for generating SUGMS is pretty standard. We use Pythia, Prospino, and PGS. We pass the events through an analysis suite that aims to reproduce the Atlas Jespels Met search, the CMS highly stable charged particle searches, et cetera, as well as possible. Wherever possible, we do exactly what they did. Some of their isolation requirements we have to play a little bit with. But to the extent that we can reproduce Atlas, we do. So we've got a lot of searches in here by now, so all these 70 EV searches, we're starting to work on the 80 EV searches as well. Some of this is still in progress. So this is showing we really do have a lot of the searches here. So this is a snapshot of the Atlas page, and you know, most of these things are checked off. If they're not checked off, there's either a reason or we're working on it. So we really do try to be as comprehensive as possible in terms of taking all these searches into account. Okay, we should check that our pipeline is reproducing SUSY events in roughly the same way as Atlas. This is a Jess plus Met region validation. For a specific MSUGRA benchmark point, we construct this effective mass distribution for events passing all cuts in this region. Red is us, blue is Atlas, purple is where they overlap, and it's pretty good. We're confident that we're doing this reasonably well most of the time. Okay, so now we go and we apply our searches. So I'll show only some of the results. This is the Phi Tau Tau search that places limits in the MA 10 beta plane. And in green and blue, you see the constraints that were in effect at the end of last year when we constructed our set. The latest update that I know of is this red curve, and it doesn't do too much damage, it only knocks out about 160 models, and the reason is twofold. One is that models over here are already constrained by flavor constraints like V sub S to mu mu. The other reason is that these curves only go up to 500 GeV, and our scan is all the way out here too, going up to 4 TeV in MA. As a snapshot, let me show quickly the results of all the searches. So in each row is shown for the neutralino LSP set, the fraction of the set that is excluded by each of these searches at various energies whenever the search is done. At 25 inverse femtobarns, we've also extrapolated the ATEV6 inverse femtobarn results, assuming that they perform the searches again with the same cuts and see their expected background. And this is the percentage of remaining models after current searches, and if you went to 25 inverse femtobarns. So I should say a few things about this.
Wait, so 5 times more data means you want the same.
Right. So the statement here is that going from 6 inverse femtobarns to 25 inverse femtobarns doesn't do too much. And so the reason is that here there were downward fluctuations. So these results here are better than expected. Whereas here, so particularly in the JetPulse Met search, which is by far the most powerful, these are just expected. So that's why. The other thing I should emphasize is that there's a few thousand models that are excluded by these 70 EV searches that are not excluded by the 80 EV searches. And this is just looking at the first few lines, sort of the traditional 0-1 to lepton searches. And this is important because what's happening is you tighten your cuts in going from 70 EV to 80 EV. And the statement here is that as you tighten your cuts, necessarily, of course, you have to get rid of increasing background, but you should be careful that you've done your previous analyses as to cover as thorough of the lights, as thorough a region of sort of light parameter space as you can.
Sorry, in both the two columns on the right, you're using the same set of cuts that the analysis on the from 70.
No, so these are actually done searches at 80 EV, and so these are the 80 EV searches extrapolated.
Okay, so from going from 6 inverse femtobarns to 25, you're going from being statistics limited to, if you keep the same cuts, right, to
right.
Systematics.
Sure. So right. So yeah. So this is assuming the systematic errors just scale in the same way. So I mean, it's a very rough estimate. Of course, we'll change the cuts. Okay. So looking at the effects of the searches on our specific sparkles, here's a plot that's similar to the one from before. It's a density plot in the Skorpin-Guino mass plane, and most of these searches are designed to exclude models down here. And in fact, that's what happens. We can zoom in on this bottom left corner. And the purple is just where is just below our scan range. But we can look at what happens to these models after the LHC searches. And so this is before the LHC searches. And this is after. So as expected, they're significantly constrained. However, there are models with somewhat light scorks and Guinos that still survive. And these are models with compressed spectra, that kind of thing. You can also look at the effects of the individual searches on these particles. So this is the Guino mass distribution for the full neutralino LSP set in black. And what these colored curves show are the Guino mass distributions for the subsets of models passing the various cuts as they're cumulatively applied. So for instance, the blue curve is the Guino mass distribution for models passing the standard two searches, so 0-1 and 2 leptons, third generation, and then multi-leptons. So of course, SUSY searches do a lot. Then the specific searches here don't do too much. But you can see that clearly the non-MET searches are orthogonal. So they complement each other well. Also, cutting on the Higgs mass changes the shape of the distribution slightly. So these distributions fall off a little bit at heavier Guino masses. This one doesn't. So this indicates when you have if you want a heavy Higgs, so a Higgs near 125 GeV, you have a mild preference for Guinos, which makes sense because it feeds in at loop level. So the lights work do the same thing. Again, the non-MET searches are orthogonal, and it's roughly the same picture. So the interesting thing I'm going to talk about later, too, is what happens to the stops and spottings. So again, your regular SUSY searches just kill all this distribution uniformly, because you're just looking for light sporks and galenos. But from red down is the effect of the third generation searches. And so these certainly do work to some extent. So the green curve is hidden under here, because the subsequent searches aren't doing anything. But some of these models down here have tricky cascade decays, and so you see some survive down here. And you know, I'm going to talk about that more when I talk about fine-tuning. I've talked a bit about complementarity. It's one of the advantages of looking at full spectra. So if you look at our models in the dark matter, in some sort of something dark matter inspired, so this is the spin-independent cross-section xenon would see against the LSP mass, you know, you get something like this, where xenon 100 is the latest xenon 100 bound that's a little better than the one we used at first, and this is the expected one-ton upgrade. You can look at what happens if, from this before search plot, you impose the LHC searches. And you see that the shape doesn't really change that much, and that's good, because it means that the dark matter and LHC searches are really complementing each other, so it's showing you that they're both useful.
You said that in some of the models you're underproducing dark matter.
Right.
So are you assuming that this with that fraction of dark matter is neutrally low, or are you assuming the whole dark matter is neutrally low?
Right, so we account for that. So if the dark matter is making up 10% of the WMAP, so it's 0.01234,
yeah.
then we knock that down by a factor of 10. That's right.
So why was the xenon-1 sensitivity is about more than 2 out of 10, stronger than xenon-1?
Why is that sensitive? I mean, that
yeah.
Is the projection is different. It's just, yes.
At the minus 46.
This is, yeah, this is just their curve.
But it's an experiment you need the funding, so.
Bigger, better. Also, after you require a Higgs mass to your 125 GeV, this shape also won't change. It gets thinned out, and I'll talk about how many models are really left. But this is roughly independent of LHC and dark matter searches. Okay. So on the gravity and LHC side, we're still working on some stuff. And a lot of the results are the same, but I'll highlight a couple things, which is that since the gravitino LSP is nearly massless, you get a lot more MET in your final states. So these searches on top actually do slightly better. The other thing is that because your NLSP is often detector stable, the heavy stable charged particle searches are much more powerful than they were before. So this is a plot I showed before. And it's for the full model set, the NLSP against LSP mass in the gravitino set. And as I mentioned, heavy stable charged particle searches are going to do a lot of damage. Since the stable particle searches are what shape the set, it's interesting to see what happens. So after the searches, you'll see these bands are kind of replaced by sort of the effective constraints that are coming from the better stable particle searches. You can also construct these same kind of plots for the sparticles and see how they're all affected. So this is the stop mass for when the stop is the NLSP, so everything decays at the stop. If the stop if the stop is the NLSP, then you have good constraints from these third generation searches. That's pretty much the story. I mean, these searches are pretty effective. Okay. Let me talk about the Higgs. So you've seen these plots. There's excesses in both Atlas and CMS, driven by gamma gamma, WW, and ZZ, in Higgs searches. And we started to ask, you know, how generic is it to get this in the MSSM by looking at our model sets? Now, if you want to make something that looks like what was seen with the LHC, you don't just need a scalar near 125 or 126 GeV, but you also need it to have approximately the right decay properties. So what we do for each of our models is we calculate the cross-section for glue-glue fusion to make a Higgs decaying to gamma-gamma, and normalize that to the standard model cross-section for a Higgs of the same mass, when we just call this R gamma-gamma. So it's similar to the mu parameters that the experimenters tend to use. Over this section, I'll show a lot of these kind of R variables. Again, all it is the glue-glue to Higgs to some final state cross-section normalized to the standard model. So one is the standard model's gamma-gamma production. So the first order question we can ask is, how many models do we have that give a Higgs with the approximately the right mass and a decent gamma-gamma cross-section? And the answer is a fair number. So we've divided it as follows on this modernist-looking plot. So the blue points have Higgs near 125 GeV and a gamma-gamma cross-section slightly above the standard model. The red points have photon-photon cross-section slightly below. And these ones have a pretty low gamma-gamma cross-section. Sometimes they'll appear in black. I'll adopt this coloring scheme throughout this section. I should point out that about one in five of our models have a Higgs in this range, and so it's by no means hard to get. This is even true with the lighter spectra in the Gravitino LSP set. So it's a little harder now. Maybe one in 10 models have a Higgs near 125 GeV, but it's still quite viable. So I'll specialize to the neutralino LSP case for most of this section, but the conclusions hold true either way. So, as a refresher, how do you get a heavy Higgs? Well, these are the corrections of the Higgs mass from tops and stops. And the stops the stop masses are given by diagonalizing this matrix. It turns out that the maximal contribution to the Higgs mass from the stops is obtained when this mixing parameter, which I'll call xt, is root 6 times the mean of the stop masses. So we see this. So this is the mixing divided by the stop mass. And you can see that around root 6, indeed, you're maximizing your Higgs mass. For a 125 GeV Higgs, you do need some amount of mixing. So this region here is empty. So this is something to keep in mind. And again, the color scheme is the same. So if you have these models, right, with the Higgs mass near 125 GeV and a gamma-gamma cross-section that's somewhat close to the standard model, you can ask, well, how much do you expect to get in other modes? So how much do you expect to get in glue-glue Higgs to ZZ? So we construct this again. And one is the standard model prediction. And we see a fairly wide spread, right, for these models. And
it's a
large scale, but there's a tail. It's still 100 models going out there. Let me say that this is also fairly correlated with gamma-gamma. And what's happening is the HZZ coupling and the H gamma-gamma coupling are the effective H gamma-gamma coupling are approximately the same as in the standard model. Now, if I tell you that, I have to explain how they can differ so much in the standard model, as I will. But before I do that, let me just emphasize that this appears in different modes as well. So all of these modes, WW, Z gamma, tau tau, tend to be correlated. And it's because the effective coupling of the Higgs to these final states is not too different from the standard model values. So most of our Higgs are fairly standard model-like. So the exception to this correlation happens when you look at BB. So the BB production is actually anti-correlated with the gamma-gamma production. And so if you think about it, this kind of makes sense because BB is already the dominant branching fraction for a 125 GeV Higgs. If you push that up, it'll come at the expense of all your other branching fractions. Indeed, this is what happens. And so it turns out that what's doing it is Suzy corrections to the Higgs to BB with. And this is one. So this is the standard model Higgs to BB with. And as you see, there's this fairly wide tail going out to high H to BB widths. And at these high widths, these come at the expense of your gamma-gamma cross-section. So I said that the H gamma-gamma, HZZ, H tau tau effective couplings were all the same as the standard model. So why is H2PB any different? So we looked around, and it turns out Howie Haber has calculated these corrections in great detail. So you know, there are corrections from vertex corrections, wave function, renormalization, counter terms, and he did them all out. And what they found was that as the particles get heavier, of course, SUSY corrections normally decouple quickly, as they do for all the other decays. However, in certain limits, the decoupling actually happens very slowly. And so the SUSY corrections of the HBB width are large. So as I showed, the large corrections will push up the BB width, decreasing the branching ratios for other states like gamma gamma. So the example that we see in our model set is this maximal spottom mixing with large tan beta. So as shown here, the spottom mixing normalized to the bottom mass. And you see that when this mixing goes in, down here, the Higgs BB width is receiving a large correction. It's nice that you see that it's fairly well correlated. I mean, this is exactly what's happening. So it's these very slowly decoupling SUSY corrections to the HBB width that's changing the all the other branching corrections. So this is what's doing everything. So turning it around, I would say that one thing you would want to look for you've seen the Higgs for sure is to say, well, okay, so let's see if we can measure H to BB very well. So this is by no means easy, but I'd say it's probably a pretty good place to look if you're looking for the MSSM. Okay, let me close by talking about naturalness.
What was the conclusion so far? That about 10% of all those models you generated survived?
Oh, so how many models survive right now?
Yeah.
Out of the full set, so about 60%. So that was the last.
Including the Higgs.
Including the Higgs again, right. So it's about, in the neutralino LSP set, it's about a sixth of 60%, so 10%. So if you make the Higgs mascot and you definitely want to make that Higgs mascot, then it gets cut down. But we could redo this scan, and it wouldn't be too hard to get Higgs masses near 125 GeV.
Did a lot of prior would be similar fractions survive?
With a log prior, I imagine a similar fraction would survive. It would depend on if you put the same. It would depend exactly what your scan ranges were, right? Because you tend to want slightly heavier stops to get the heavier Higgs. But yeah,
that's the target here, right? Because you really need the A terms to be large.
Well,
the A terms to be TEP scale.
Right, so.
And log prior, you would be populating mostly the 100 GeV TEP.
Right, so that's the same, right? With both the stop masses and the H terms, right? You have to, if you pick the same ranges, I think the answer would be it would be harder to get the Higgs mass at 125. But if you made it so that you still got sort of TEV like H terms, then you could.
But you agree that the ranges are the
same. Yes,
and
I agree.
A lower fraction.
Absolutely. So the standard way to look at fine-tuning is you have some solution to the hierarchy problem that predicts the electroweak scale. And the question is, how sensitive is your prediction of the electroweak scale to your new physics parameters? So we follow the old Barbieri paper and just ask, what is the partial derivative of the electroweak symmetry Bacon scale, which we use mz squared for, to each of our PMSSM parameters, so for these 19 parameters. There's a three-level relationship between mz squared, mu, and the Higgs doublet masses. And so mu, of course, comes in at tree level and is often the biggest of these derivatives. However, stop masses come in at a loop, and even gluinos come in. Eventually, in theory, everything comes in. So for each of our models, we look at the tuning from each of the parameters, and we take the maximum and just have one single fine-tuning parameter delta for each model. That's just how we're parameterizing fine-tuning in our model set. So this plot shows the cumulative amount of fine-tuning in our Neutralino and Gravitino model sets, and then again in blue and red after requiring the Higgs to be near 125 GeV. So clearly, Higgs near 125 GeV are admittedly more fine-tuned. What happens, though, is that, I mean, you know, exactly how much fine-tuning you're comfortable with is a personal choice. And, you know, the if you pick, you know, something somewhere, say, between 100 and 1,000, there's still a fair number of models that are OK and not too fine-tuned. So we wanted to look at these in a bit more detail. So as for what's making the dominant contribution of fine-tuning, as I mentioned, normally it's the Higgsino master. So U comes in at tree level. But then the stop mass parameters are important too. Linears are two loops, so they're never actually the biggest. Let me say that when you go to, when you require a Higgs mass near 125 GeV, since I said we require stop mixing, the relative importance of this guy will go up. So because, as I said, you need stop mixing to get a 125 GeV Higgs mass, if you make that cut, the AT bar goes up. So this makes sense. If you require a Higgs near 125, you have some tuning coming from your stop mixing.
Can we go back to the slides? One last slide?
Oh, yeah.
So I should read it as, you know, if I look at 500,
yeah,
or let's look at 1,000,
yeah,
if I care for Gravitino LSP with the right Higgs mass,
mm-hmm,
then 10 to the 4 models have a tuning of 1,000.
1,000 or less. So it's human. That's right.
So if you go to 100, that means there's one model. The red ones.
Sorry. So there are 10 to the 4 models.
No. We're saying if
you're down at 100, what is the meaning?
Ah, if you're down at 100, right, so there's only one model here, right?
So that's it?
That's it, that's right, that's right. So we can, no, that's fair, yeah, that's right. I mean, there, so, but the, yeah, if you, so, okay, so this is good, right, because we did exactly this, right? I mean, we said, okay, let's make a really, you know, tight scenario fine-tuning. You know, there are only, you know, like, and let's further require that the Higgs is near 125 GeV, and you pass all existing constraints. So, you know, there are only a handful of models, and we just thought to ask, you know, what are the generic properties of these models with low fine tuning and appropriate Higgs mass? So we find there are light Higgsinos, as you would expect from tuning, usually light Wienos as well. And they're moderately light third generation squarks. They're generally heavily mixed, as well as heavy first or second generation squarks. And this is just because if you want to pass all existing constraints, including LHC, you want to have not seen them yet. So also, the Gluino is not really constrained if you only require 1% fine tuning. This is in line with what other people have shown. Let me show one such sample spectrum. And you know, the as advertised, the Higgsinos and Wienos are down here. Wieno can be anywhere. The Gluino and first and second generation squarks are heavy enough that you wouldn't have seen them yet. Your third generation squarks, at least a few of them, have to be down here. Your sleptons can be anywhere. And what I'm going to argue is that there are many possible cascades for the light stops and bottoms here just because of all the multiplicity in the Higgsinos multiple. So this is actually a generic signature of these models with low fine tuning that you have.
Where are the Higgs partners?
The Higgs.
Like the heavy Higgs and the
pseudo. Oh, the heavy Higgs are, they're pretty heavy because most of these models are decoupled. I don't know exactly what they are here, but I mean, they're probably well above the LHC range, like GTEV. So I'm just saying we have tons of other models. Well, we have a few other models if you make a very tight cut. We have more if you loosen that fine-tuning cut. And they all have, you know, the same kind of ideas. You know, light Higgsinos, light stops. So, okay, let me explicitly show this for that first model I showed. So you have a stop at 600 GeV, which is admittedly outside the range of direct stop searches right now, but the thing is that if you were to look for it in the easiest stop to top LSP decay, you would pay a fairly sharp branching fraction cost. Now, of course, you may, maybe you can look for it in decay, so these neutralinos too. But first of all, you're still paying a 1 in 2 squared branching fraction cost. And also, there's other stuff that comes in from the resulting cascade. So, you know, since there are all these different particles that you deviate to, it's not a priori obvious how well the existing searches will do. I know this model survived.
So this model is still alive.
This model is still alive.
It's not excluded by the multi-lepton search?
No, it is not excluded by the multi-lepton.
Did you look at only Atlas?
Yeah, so this is only Atlas. But I think...
That's really surprising that...
So the other thing is that because generically you have renos and hexenos, you know, a lot of these are compressed. So for instance, when you go through this is W star, right? I mean, the leptons, any leptons coming from here are completely invisible, right? So this is generic, right? I mean, you have closely split genos. You have a lot of them below the light stops and spotters. So they are harder to see than you would nightly.
You should look at the
CMS searches.
They go to lower MET than Atlas.
Lower MET?
And lower HD.
So this does include the soft lepton search that goes down to 6 GeV in PT. Maybe we should talk about it.
But they cut on MET at 100 GeV.
So for this bottom, I mean, it's a similar story, and this is what I said. If you look for the direct bottom decay down here, you're paying a heavy branching fraction cost. So generically, if you look for these stops and bottoms, it's challenging. So it's interesting to see all the searches that have been done for direct stop and bottom production. I'm not sure how well they're going to do as the LHC increases in Lumi, and it'll be good to see what else comes up. So I've shown you our approach to investigating minimal supersymmetry, the LHC. We look at complete spectra, and it allows us to draw some nice plots. So it allows us to show some correlations between dark matter, LHC, Higgs. The phenomenon is slightly different. Both have collider-stable particles. These are interesting to look for. The LHC is already doing pretty well in both MET and non-MET searches. While ATV searches improve your overall coverage, as you tighten your cuts, you start to miss models at the low end. So this is something to watch for. I talked about Higgs production cross-section and emphasized how measuring H to BB soon would be a very good thing for the MSSM. And finally, I talked about naturalness and how moderately light stops are not only still allowed, but I think will be somewhat difficult to look for due to their generic cascades in somewhat natural spectra. So we're doing more all the time, and stay tuned. Thank you.
We already have lots of questions, but if there's some more.
So the part of what I would have said is that if you loved the MSSM before the LHC turned on, you're less in love now. But I kind of sense that you don't think that you.
Well, I mean, I would say maybe slightly less in love, but not given up. So in the sense that, the longer you go without seeing something, right? I mean,
it's a little more than that, right? Like, if you go to those
the fine-tuning plot?
If you go to those spectra, so how many of those examples actually had a dark matter kind of thing? That is the dark matter, not just a fraction.
Okay, right, so...
Because, one of the reasons to be in love with Susie was unification, dark matter,
and
fine-tuning.
1,000
means
1,000.
No,
I know, but
yeah.
You run up to 1,000.
But, okay, so...
1,000 tuning, because you're going to create stuff.
Well, anyway, so...
Okay. Okay, so in terms of dark matter, you know, these models, right, I said, you know, we only require it to be less than WNF bound. And you know, these models have fairly low dark matter, like they're not going to give you all of dark matter. And how much? So, I mean, like very little. Like, I mean, Higgs-Enos annihilate pretty well.
Right.
So, like, call it, you know, anywhere from like 10 to the minus 1 down to 10 to the minus 3 of the full amount of dark matter. So, I mean, this is the price you pay.
So, you can close that out as well.
Well, yeah. Do you have other things?
No, that's okay.
Okay. Yeah.
So what's left?
That's unification.
What does that mean?
Anna buys us flowers. Anna buys us flowers. Sorry.
But it's done so well.
Most people in these relationships don't leave.
Well, it would be nice to have a plot that actually shows. Maybe I guess it's obvious because of your
they're Higgs-Enos.
It's always Higgs-Enos,
yeah.
In all the models, all the wonderful wives are Higgs-Enos.
Right, yeah, so they know it pretty well. Yeah.
So when you go back to your original uniform prior, how do you know where to put the boundaries of the space on which you
but how many computers he has?
Yeah, so I mean the boundaries.
Sometimes, I mean, some of these parameters could go to are not complex, but they can go from 0 to infinity or something.
So
where do you cut the parameter off? Uniform doesn't mean uniform over all values.
Sure, I mean, uniform over there are some scan range. So like, you mean like 10 beta? How do we choose to cut off at 10 beta of 60?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are higher things that come in. I mean, I guess for...
you have masses. So the mass could go to infinity.
No.
Okay, so I mean, if your masses go up, then I mean, if you have all your sparticles at like 100 TeV, then you're not even, I mean, then you're really cheap, right? I mean, then you're not, how much are you really solving the hierarchy problem? Right?
You can still cut it off, first experimental measures works.
Right, I mean, yeah, you could admittedly just put up the first integration sparks.
So the cutoff is basically, so it still has a hope of solving the hierarchy.
I would say so. I mean,
if you had a lot of computer power, you really should put, you know, sparks to be the mass, the soft mass to be a few tens of thousands of GeV, because they will still not affect the tuning very much. But the others are affected by tuning. You cannot have the soft mass is very large and not that tuned. So it's partially tuning, so it's partially computer performance.
Yeah.
Well, the computer part was why you generated random sample. But you could randomly sample a large area.
You could.
Parameters.
I think the conclusions are pretty abysmal already.
That's what I said.
Okay, well, let's end the speaker.